Welcome to the Opium Den Interviews. I'm Daniel Williams. Today is June 2nd, 2009, and we'll be speaking with Howard Wooldridge, who was one of the founding members of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, commonly known as LEAP. Many of you may know Howard from attending drug policy conferences. Howard is he's quite the cowboy-looking fellow. He's a tall gentleman, always has a 10-gallon hat on, cowboy boots, jeans, and a big belt buckle. So for all of you who didn't know who that person was at these drug policy conferences, that is Howard Wooldridge. Howard, as I mentioned, was one of the five original founders of LEAP, and he was recently fired from that position. So we're going to speak with Howard about that, as well as his work in the drug policy reform arena in Washington, D.C. So we're going to give Howard a call right now and get right into it. One ringy-dingy. Two ringy-dingies.
Hello, this is Howard.
Well, hello, Howard. This is Daniel Williams. Welcome to the Opium Den.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Well, I told all of our listeners at the top as I was setting this up, I described you, for those who weren't familiar with the tall cowboy guy at all the drug policy conferences, that was you. And I also informed our listeners that you were one of the founding members of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, LEAP, one of the better advocacy groups out there for repealing drug prohibition. In fact, the only advocacy group out there for the repeal of drug prohibition. But I told my listeners that you were recently, your status with LEAP has recently changed, and I was wondering if you would be open to discussing that recent development with us.
Certainly the basic facts are that there was a discussion amongst the board of directors on whether or not to retain the executive director, Jack Cole. He's been the executive director since our founding in 2002. The board decided to retain Mr. Cole. I expressed my disapproval with that, dissatisfaction with that particular decision, and for that I was terminated as the education specialist on Capitol Hill.
Were you vying for that position, or did you believe someone else would do a better job?
Oh, no, I was not vying for the position whatsoever. I was very content and excited to go to Capitol Hill every day and meet with staffers and members and chiefs of staff, et cetera, to add a law enforcement voice that this is this modern prohibition is bad policy. I think that's enough.
Okay, well, it was a rather radical solution to a situation, to an internal situation, and I feel badly that it was handled that way, because you were always a strong advocate for LEAP and for repealing drug prohibition. So let's get past that, and let's talk about your recent efforts on Capitol Hill. I know you were up there trying to see at least one congressman a day to talk about drug prohibition and its need for being repealed. How did that go on a daily basis? Was it a slog, or was it something you enjoyed tremendously? And that was a response that you got from staff and the few congressmen that you were able to buttonhole.
Well, certainly it's been a slog. I mean, I've been there for a little over 3 years. I've worn out two sets of boot leather, and I just had to replace my briefcase from opening and closing it so many times to hand out materials, etc. The good news is that from the beginning, back in December of 2005 until now, there has been a tremendous sea change at the staff level of lack of resistance to the LEAP message that all prohibition from marijuana to heroin must go.
Why do you think that happened, actually, on the staff level? What's changed their minds? Obviously you've been working very diligently, but what do you think has worked also to change the mindset of staff?
Well, I believe LEAP in general can take some credit for this. We mostly go to Rotaries, Kiwanis clubs. I've done my fair share of about 400 such clubs or churches. And meeting with 40 people or 50 people, 100 people at a time, We've really gotten to a lot of people across America. You know, we have speakers in 36 states, and I think this has helped change the viewpoint of America that, yes, the war on drugs has been a failure, and the Zogby poll shows that at 76%, people agree with people as different as Barack Obama, our president, who said the drug war is an utter failure two weeks ago in a Senate hearing. Senator Hatch, no liberal, said, quote, the war on drugs has been a failure, unquote. So LEAP has certainly been part of the mix of moving America to understand that current policy is an abject failure. And on the staff level that I've been seeing over the last 3 years, I think a big chunk of it has been both, one, we've seen the massive problems caused by the meth in Mexico. It's funding Al-Qaeda. It's costing a lot of money. And then secondly, I really give a lot of credit to Ron Paul. He has galvanized the conservative Republican Party to understand that the government is not the solution to everything. And that for you and your audience, you need to know that the war on drugs, modern prohibition, is a liberal's, like many state liberals' dream of threatening people with government punishment, backed up by government police and prisons. If you dare step outside the box of alcohol, tobacco, Prozac, and Valium, and Ron Paul has really energized the young conservatives to say this is a non-conservative issue. This is violating all conservative principles. So, with all the combination there, we now see the country ready to accept kumbaya that this is bad policy.
Well, you mentioned that it was kind of a liberal wet dream, but my experience, and I'm 59 years old, and I've been paying attention to politics and especially drug policy since 1968 and when mm-hmm. Nixon was elected. But every single administration, Republican and Democrat, has been complicit in keeping drug prohibition as a policy. So, mm-hmm. and you mentioned Ron Paul, and I think that that is good. Do you believe that that the Republicans, the conservatives out there, should make this an issue for their rebirth and open up the tent a little wider and go against drug prohibition? Do you think that would be a viable issue for them, or are they just too tight-assed to have that happen?
Well, that remains to be seen. I'm sure your audience, the conservative wing, is familiar with Grover Norquist. He's one of the real think tank kind of guys, and he wrote a book recently called think of the name of it. But the Leave Us Alone coalition was the essence of what he was trying to bring the Republican conservative movement together, saying, you know what, let's put together a whole bunch of folks who just say, leave me alone, stay out of my way when it comes to my guns, my religion, schooling my children, and he's out there saying that, yeah, actually, perhaps the concept of leave Willie Nelson alone, leave Michael Phelps, leave Whitney Houston, leave anyone using these illegal drugs in the privacy of their own home as an adult, it should be part of the Leave Us Alone coalition. So there is a contingent out there who understand that despite what they've voted in the past or supported in the past, they've come to recognize, as Ron Paul did many, many years ago, and other conservatives like Gary Johnson, former governor of New Mexico, and then on the other side, Kirk Schmoak, 35 years ago, said this is bad policy. Prohibition is not solving one problem. In fact, it creates many problems. So I see this as something where the conservatives, the Republicans, could say, you know what? We are going to return to our more libertarian roots and say we want limited government, personal responsibility, and states' rights. And for you in the audience, all I work on in Capitol Hill, I do not work on legalization of anything. I simply work to end the federal prohibition of these drugs, much as the 21st Amendment did with alcohol, made alcohol states' rights issue, and every state does it differently. And God bless.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I've always taken the tact that the word legalization is a bad word for us to use because it's used as a pejorative term and a cudgel by those in those prohibitionists against us, because when they say, well, they're out for legalizing drugs, the word legalization confers some sort of legitimacy on the particular commodity or whatever it is you're trying to legalize. And I don't think that there is a legitimacy in that context for drugs. You know, most of these substances have difficult problems surrounded with them. But you spoke of repealing prohibition, and that is, I think, in the terminology that should be used, and it tends to make it a more agreeable concept to the individual, which is one thing I always had. I spoke with Jack and Peter Christ and other members of LEAP, and your literature and your T-shirts say, "Cops say legalize drugs, ask me why." And, you know, I never really understood, especially with your telling me what your position is now, I never understood championing the word legalization when technically repealing alcohol prohibition did not legalize alcohol. It just ended the prohibition of its production and distribution. So why is it that it's cops say legalize drugs?
Well, as the author of that phrase and the T-shirt, I started wearing that T-shirt 10 years ago in Texas, and LEAP adopted it as its T-shirt and its motto. We did that because it's so simple and it is provocative. So it draws us into a conversation. And then when you draw into a conversation, ask me why, then you can say, we mean legalize, regulate. What do you mean regulate? Well, as a starting point for discussion, let's give these drugs from marijuana to heroin the same rules and regulations as the second deadliest drug in America, alcohol. And as soon as you engage in this 30-second discussion on the street or in the elevator or in line at the Burger King, then people say, oh, okay, so treat it like alcohol, 21 and over, state regulations, purity standards, some taxes. Oh, okay. And so the T-shirt is designed to be a kind of a lightning rod, but as soon as we engage in a real conversation, we mean legalize, regulate. And I can tell you that it would be difficult to put on one T-shirt, legalize and regulate. It would come down basically below your belt line, and it wouldn't be effective. So that's the short version of why that's out there. But it gets people to thinking, and then when you ask about, what do you mean, like sell it like candy bars, you say, well, no, of course not. We would treat it much more like alcohol, and that way we'd have some government controls, et cetera. But that's the reason the slogan was chosen, is because it does spark many conversations, I can tell you.
Well, you mentioned the Zogby poll, which I mention quite often in my speaking engagements, my most recent ones, obviously. But the Zogby poll shows that 76% of the American public believe the drug war has failed. And, yes, there are some of those who believe we're just not trying hard enough. But the overwhelming majority believe a fundamental change is needed, and a significant number of them believe that we should repeal prohibition and install or create a regulated market to control the sale and distribution of these substances. So if we're already there in the mindset of many individuals out there, do you think we need to change the discussion as opposed to, and instead of continuing talking about repealing prohibition, change the discussion and try to paint a picture of what the American landscape would look like under a regulated and controlled marketplace? I don't see that much of the rhetoric being devoted to that, and I think that's an important thing for people who are already leaning our way that can't really articulate their thoughts properly. We need to, you know, paint that picture. What's your thoughts in that area?
Well, you're absolutely correct. And in fact, 2 years ago, I proposed to the LEAP Board of Directors, in addition to our mission statement, we need a vision statement. A vision statement which will help America see what would the world look like post-prohibition. You know, imagine a world where there are no drug dealers, no teenagers sucked into a gang and selling drugs off sidewalks, which gets 14-year-olds shot every day. Think of a world where if one day you or a loved one has a drug problem, you see a doctor, not a judge. Think of a world of an America where police officers focus on drunk drivers, child molesters, child cyber pornography, people flying airplanes into buildings, and not Michael Phelps, Willie Nelson, Whitney Houston, and their suppliers. Think of spending money on education instead of $72 billion spent on police and prisons. And these are all possible if we have the courage to get past our current policy and end modern prohibition. That is the essence of my vision statement for LEAP. Unfortunately, Mr. Cole and others decided that was not what we wanted to project to the public, but I strongly believe that we do need to put out and educate the public as to what is possible in a post-prohibition world, because 100 years ago, when heroin was legal and you could buy it out of the Sears catalog,
well, that's, you're bringing that up. Let me interject here. I wanted to bring that up. The heroin and opium and laudanum and cocaine being available in the Sears Roebuck catalog. It's been my experience that when I tell that to people, they look at me like I'm from outer space. And then it's easy to, once you convince them that that was actually the truth, then they look at you and listen to everything you say in a completely different light. What is your experience on Capitol Hill with staffers and congressmen and congresswomen? Do they understand that part of our history, or do they just believe drugs have always been prohibited and don't understand the nitty-gritty of buying heroin from Sears? And the fact that we had no drug crime.
In the 540 offices, the senators, congressmen in the five territories that have a representative in Congress, the 540 offices, these young people, usually 23 to 30 years old, are some of the smartest, brightest, aware individuals in America. And almost every one of them I've ever talked to knew that 100 years ago you could buy heroin out of the Sears catalog and a needle to go with it.
Right. It was for $1.50. You could get a needle, a syringe, and two vials of morphine, and they would deliver it to you in a nice silver-tooled kit, which I guess was the origination of the word kit and works. So what about the actual Congress people?
Congressman Rohrabacher, a very conservative Republican from California, said about a couple months ago, quoted, saying, if Congress, now just separating out the drugs, saying just marijuana, if Congress could vote in secret, by secret ballot, they would end federal prohibition of marijuana today.
So why don't they? Why do you believe their secret desires don't parallel their public statements when the Zogby poll shows that there's a large constituency out there that would rally behind them as opposed to throwing tomatoes at them? What's the fear?
Well, the fear is because the public is only at 42%, and 42% will get you unelected in the next vote. So the people on even marijuana are only at 42%, and they are. And most people in Congress are not leaders; they are followers. And as one aide told me last week, when I was met with her, she said, "Look, these people are a bunch of abject cowards, and they will not do anything. They would rather do nothing and watch Rome burn than take a vote, which may cost them the next election."
Well, what do you think about people who may? They say 46% or whatever it is isn't really enough yet, but how accurate is that really, do you think? I mean, are some people still lying even to pollsters in private and because they're afraid to even speak up and agree with that? I mean, do you think that those numbers are accurate or low?
I believe the numbers are fairly close because we've had votes in Nevada on legalization of marijuana, which went down in flames, and they were pretty close to the polls. But you're certainly right that people like my sister said, I will never come out and publicly in favor of ending prohibition until she had her last daughter graduate from high school, because she was afraid that the police and the principal would come to her house, accuse her of doing drugs, and take her child away. So you do have some of that. But at the end of the day, I also know from my thousands and literally tens of thousands of contacts with people on my T-shirt that the support for prohibition today is a mile wide and an inch deep, like the Platte River in the summertime. Most people can be swayed in 30 seconds to a minute to come over to the LEAP position. So since everybody agrees pretty much that war on drugs is a failure, the logical course is to lead them into the idea that let's get rid of drug dealers and sell these drugs in a state-regulated store. That is a very easy sell compared to 12 years ago when in Fort Worth, Texas, when I wore the T-shirt for the first time, people were putting me in the same category as child molesters, and we should be cut up with a rusty knife and killed. So we've made great progress amongst the public and others on this issue.
Well, let's talk about emboldening people to speak what they really believe, and I'm going to start that off I'm going to ask you to compare candidate Obama and President Obama with regards to his drug policies and statements. Who do you like better, candidate Obama or President Obama?
Well, they're fairly close. I'm going to give the the gentleman from Illinois some benefit of the doubt. You know, we're facing the greatest economic crisis since the 30s, and when he was asked about legalization of marijuana, he certainly gave a flippant and glib answer to the press. On the other hand, he did fulfill his campaign promise to make medical marijuana a states' rights issue.
Belatedly. No, he didn't. He made it a states' rights issue by having the DEA stand down, which was kind of a wobbly deal for a little bit. We haven't had any raids in the past few weeks, but he kind of came to that late. And what you're saying, Howard, and I don't mean to interrupt you or anything, but what you're saying is that President Obama's got too much on his plate to address this issue, and I take umbrage with that because one, he made pretty positive and progressive statements during the campaign, didn't take a lot of heat for it, and a lot of people voted for him, if not specifically for that, but as an important cause. So when they say that Obama's got too much on his plate, we're in this economic tsunami, and he just, you know, doesn't need to blow any political capital, I think that it would be very easy for him to, especially during this new National Criminal Justice Commission Act that we're going to talk about in a minute, I think it would be very beneficial to President Obama to make a statement with just on marijuana only, about taking it out of Schedule One and making it a complete states' rights issue, keeping all the other narcotics and the like and the Controlled Substances Act until we can repeal that, but at least take marijuana off the list and throw it back to the states. No longer fund any state programs for marijuana interdiction if they can separate that from narcotics, and actually make that. So you're gonna have to convince me why you think he won't spend the political capital now.
A couple of things. Besides the state's rights for medical marijuana, we also have, which slipped completely under the radar. I read five newspapers a day, including the gossip columns, because when you're going to be a Washington insider, you've got to know what's going on forwards and backwards and sideways. 2 weeks ago, President Calderon of Mexico signed a decriminalization bill of all drugs in Mexico.
Right.
Now, compare this with about 4 years ago when the Prime Minister of Canada said, I think we're going to make marijuana like a parking ticket, decriminalize it, make it a parking ticket. And the ambassador to Canada went to him the next day in Ottawa and said, if you dare make marijuana a decrim situation like a parking ticket, we will back up the borders, we will shut you down, we will hurt you and hurt you and hurt you.
Well, that was a Republican administration which did the same thing to Vicente Fox, though. When Vicente Fox was about to sign a very similar law, the Bush administration came down on him like a ton of bricks. So we have the border states, but why aren't we doing anything to Portugal? Those guys since 2002 have had the same decrim laws across the board. And we haven't recalled our ambassador from Portugal, and we haven't come down. I mean, Bush didn't come down on Portugal. What makes that experience different, or that experiment different than Mexico and Canada tried to
do? Nothing, except the fact that the Obama administration did not say one word to Mexico City, and Calderon signed the nation of Mexico, our southern neighbor, to a total decrim Portugal-like situation. So, again, working quietly, he has allowed Mexico to form its own drug policy, which right now the federal government of Mexico has a much more progressive stand and set of laws on drug possession than the American. And so we have to give the president in his first 120 days a little bit of time and breathing room. He's got massive problems. And I believe that he will fulfill his campaign promise. He knows this thing is a mess. He admitted smoking marijuana, using cocaine. I'm going to give the man some time. He's already done some good things. And rumor A in D.C., under rumor control, is it's going to happen that marijuana, cannabis, will be moved from Schedule 1 down to another schedule. And
yeah,
that will
but
open up medical marijuana to all 50 states. Catch the stroke of a pen.
Well, okay, so... I'm still not convinced that he can't say something. And especially when another one of his campaign promises was that he believed that needle exchange was vital to stopping the spread of HIV, especially among our intravenous drug users.
And right.
He didn't take any heat for that. So why has he changed that position? And in his new federal budget, explicitly states that not one federal dollar will go towards needle exchange programs. Explain that to me.
Well, when I see him at dinner tomorrow night, I'll ask him.
Excuse me?
I say when I see him for dinner tomorrow night, I'll ask him.
Okay.
That's a joke.
but I mean seriously, I mean that's why I'm asking you to contrast candidate Obama with President Obama in the context of drug policy. Was he just bullshitting us all?
I give him a B minus.
A B minus. Well, you must be grading him on the curve.
let's move. I've been in Washington too long and see the political process, and if you go too far too fast, think of Gary Johnson back almost 10 years ago in New Mexico. When he came out for legalization, regulation of marijuana, they asked him about the rest of the drugs. He said, well, probably we should legalize everything and regulate it. And he was crucified in the press, crucified in the polls. He was hurt for the next 4 years, and people thought you're just some kind of crazy nut job trying to legalize, regulate all drugs.
Well, let's talk about the press for a second. I mean, I know a lot of people in the press. I've been to Washington. I've been around the block, maybe not as many times or as much shoe leather as you, but let's look at the hypocrisy of the press. These guys get high, snort coke, do Vicodins, do Percocet, and then they just stand there, you know, mute when this issue comes up. Aren't they just as culpable or more culpable in this because they do have the attention of the people? Aren't they as culpable or more culpable than our politicians for remaining silent on this and being like, well, it's okay for me to do drugs but nobody else? Mm-hmm. I mean, why don't we start calling some of them out?
You're absolutely right. I've been here now 3.5 years. I have asked the editors of the Washington Post, the liberal, quote, paper, and the Washington Times, the conservatives. I said, every week I'm seeing headlines and stories about all the problems caused by modern prohibition war on drugs, from its funding the Taliban to gangs are all a problem. The biggest criminal threat in America is criminal gang, is this Mexican drug gang. The mess in Mexico, money for prisons instead of schools. So you give me all these articles about all the problems of prohibition. Would you please run some articles about all the advantages, the benefits, the good outcomes of prohibition, which would offset funding our mortal enemies, the Al-Qaeda, etc.?
Plus,
and
a lot of these
3.5 years, they've absolutely refused to run any articles. So you're correct. The press is not running the articles. Time will not do a major piece on the drug war. U.S. News, Newsweek, in 15 years, Dan, no one has ever run a major weekly piece on the war on drugs in the major three magazines. So, yes, they are absolutely guilty of cowardice, or they're working on making sure that the articles and the advertisements for their drugs are not a problem for their revenue.
Yes, but not only are these articles one-sided with regards to the downside of the drug issues, but they're being written by people who get high. I mean,
sure.
Don't you think there's a need? I'm not so opposed to public outing of individuals that have hypocritic views, but don't you think it's time to start speaking honestly and plainly and truthfully and start calling some of these individuals out? I mean, I see all these guys. I know I've gotten high with them before. And they say, well, you know, I mean, my editor won't do it, blah, 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 blah. But I say, okay, fine. If your editor won't do it, then quit writing the goddamn stories, period. Just don't write anything about the drug war if you can't present a balanced article. And then, you know, they blah, 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 and drink another shot and smoke another joint. So,
sure.
Okay, let's move past that. And I want to get on to Jim Webb's National Criminal Justice Commission Act of 2009.
Right.
And two questions. One, do you think it is the Trojan horse for Obama on this issue? And number two, do you think anything of merit will come out of the National Criminal Justice Commission Act?
Well, it's way above my pay grade on whether Jim Webb and the president have gotten their heads together and say, you know what, this is the best way to approach this without being politically crucified in 2010 or 2012. Way above my pay grade. I don't know. I've only been here 3.5 years. I'm just starting to have a kind of an idea of how things work. Some of my colleagues have been here 10 years. They could answer you that particular question better. However, I do have I refuse to use the word hope. I use the word, I have medium to high expectation that Webb's commission bill will pass, it will convene, and then the recommendations, many will be adopted by the Congress. Whether they'll go all the way to ending federal prohibition remains to be seen. It depends on how much more the LEAP speakers out there in Des Moines and Terre Haute, Indiana, and Lansing, Michigan, can get people to say to their congressmen, it's time to discuss the end of prohibition. And that's where LEAP's strength comes from as we speak to these 30 Rotarians and 30, 40 Kiwanians on a regular basis. But I do have medium to high expectations and confidence that Webb's bill will be the catalyst and the vehicle to it's the beginning of the end of modern prohibition, yes.
Well, if you look back to 1972 in Nixon's commission on marijuana,
right,
it was completely ignored. And if there was ever a time, this was before an additional 40 years of hysteria and propaganda and mm-hmm. prohibition, it was ignored back then. And like I said, I've been politically active since 1968 when I was 18 years old, and I've seen blue ribbon commissions come and go. Many of them are just stalling mechanisms, and even whether they're good or bad, they seem to be routinely ignored. But I want to ask you a question that I've asked Ethan Nadelman, Chris Crane, Alan St. Pierre, Danny Kushlick from the UK. I mean, he didn't have as much to say on this, but the other three did. Now, one of my major beefs with the National Criminal Justice Commission Act of 2009 is that it will probably, it's an 18-month long commission, but it'll probably take at least 2 years before it to get passed, for it to have their deal and then their recommendations and being voted on and things like that. So it's about a minimum of 24 months. Now, during that 24-month period, at least 1.5 million Americans, mostly younger ones, will be arrested for the simple possession of marijuana and thrown into the criminal justice system that Jim Webb is ostensibly trying to study and reform. What do you consider those 1.5 million Americans who get arrested for the simple possession of marijuana? What do you consider them?
Yeah, they're victims in every sense of the word. They're just total victims of a horrific bad set of laws. And I regret it, and that's why I worked so hard. That's why I rode my horse across America twice to push this issue and end it as fast as possible, because this is such a horrific law hurting so many millions and millions of people. It has since about 1970.
Well, I appreciate that sentiment, and I was surprised, shocked, and saddened that many of the folks that I have spoken with very, very cavalierly just blow them off and say, well, they're collateral damage.
And they're human beings, for goodness sake.
Well, of course they're human beings. And that's why I just don't understand why during this, at least, I mean, to give himself some additional cover, during the length of time that the National Criminal Justice Commission Act is in play, why can't President Obama say, while this is going on, we are going to minimize our focus on marijuana and work more on interdicting narcotics? Why can't he just say something? He has to understand, Howard, he has to understand that 1.5 million young people are going to be arrested on his watch during all of this. And that's why I find him so hypocritical and elitist. Well, it's a fact that had Obama been arrested for snorting coke or smoking pot, there's absolutely no way he'd be sitting where he is today.
That's
so
correct.
And it didn't impede his ability to succeed. So mm-hmm. Why is it that he looks at everybody else, especially all of the future Obamas of this country, and basically looks at him and says, "Well, tough shit, man. Sorry about your luck. Hope you don't get busted. If you do, you're fucked."
Yeah,
I mean, why can't I mean, that's what I don't get. I mean,
he's
got the personal history, he's got the charisma, he's got the political capital, he's got the ability, but it doesn't say squat.
Well, and maybe I've been drinking the water in D.C. too long, and that's, seriously, when I first got here, I said, I have somehow got to, you know, try to keep a real world outside the Beltway perspective. But I remember very distinctly, I was here when the Democrats took control of Congress in 2006, 2007, and all of us in reform were getting all excited about, okay, now the Democrats can pass legislation. And then I met with the aide to Nancy Pelosi, and basically
She's a real bitch, isn't she?
A complete feeling of mush. And in fact, my analysis was correct. The Democrats did nothing in 07 or 08. Because they wanted to win the presidency, and drugs, prohibition, war on drugs is a hot button issue, which is going to perhaps lose them votes. As they avoided it like the plague, and now we have a super majority practically in the Senate, the House, and of course the presidency in terms of a person who will sign legislation if it's passed. So today, Mr. Obama and the Democratic leadership are saying, in order to fulfill many things they'd like to do in their vision of America, we have to win the 2010 election enough to keep a majority. They all remember what happened in 1994 with Bill Clinton. After 2 years of his victory, he lost the House and basically the Senate. So they run scared. They run. They're trying to do as much as they think they can do without losing the next election. And
but don't they understand that they won this election, you know, partially because of a lot of young people believing in Obama changing not just the rhetoric, changing no longer using war on drugs, but not changing more than just the rhetoric. Don't they see that there was a lot of people who bought into that with him, and that they stand to lose as many of those as they would if they were to come out and make a policy and offend some other people?
I understand exactly what you're saying. I can only say it's above my pay grade and information and knowledge to answer the question. This is way above my level of what I do in Washington. I walk up and down the halls of Congress with my cowboy hat, my boots, my buckle, and I talk about ending, you know, modern prohibition at the federal level. I've only talked to, since I've been here, I've only actually had chats with about 23, 4, 5 members of Congress. You'd have to talk to somebody else to get a real good insider's view of why they do what they do or don't.
25 or 30 members of Congress is a pretty good roster for someone, in our position or in your position. So are all of these 20 to 25 that you've spoken to in private say, boy, we'd change this thing tomorrow if we could?
I mean, yes. The simple answer is yes. I've talked to serious Republicans, Texas Republicans. I've talked to liberals from the Northeast. I've talked to people from all over the members, and there is a consensus amongst those I've talked to, and I just, it just happened to be a good cross-section, and all of them would agree with the Zogby poll that it's not working, and many would say that the police are ineffective, that no matter how many drug dealers you arrest, they're all replaced the next day, so what's the point? Everybody kind of knows what I know, but it's a question of the citizens, you know, letting their politicians know it's okay to vote for good legislation when it comes to drugs. And therein lies, everybody runs in the House in a two-year cycle, and from the moment they win, they start worrying about the next election. And so the system's almost geared, or the culture is geared, to not making bold decisions. And
Let's make a bold decision here, Howard. These 20 to 25 Congress people that you've spoken with, let's make a list and out them. Do they tell you when they tell you their personal beliefs? Do they say, but if you publicize this, I'll deny it? Like, you know, like I was in a bathroom with a 12-year-old at the Greyhound bus station. Well, why don't we just make a bold statement and start calling these people on it? If you've talked to them in private, who is the public going to believe, a former policeman or a slimy politician, when it comes down to he said, she said? I mean, seriously, Howard. I mean, I'm getting so damn tired of the duplicity and the hypocrisy, and everybody wants to play along to get along, and nobody wants to ruffle any feathers. And the next thing you know, man, you know, the bird is dead, but it looks good because it's still got all of its feathers on.
Yeah, You know, I often have it at 5 o'clock over a beer with some colleagues. Exactly what you just said. You just want to, you know, put their names on a list on the front page of the Washington Times and the Los Angeles Times and the Chicago Tribune. These people have said we should legalize everything. The trouble with that is, you know, if you don't have discretion, and you don't have the ability to keep your mouth shut, you'll never talk to anybody.
Yeah, but if by exercising discretion grants you nothing more than your next access, but doesn't really do anything for your cause, you know, excuse my French, but fuck discretion.
I've been building relationships for 3 years. Now, when I meet with staffers for the second or third time, they're treating me much more like a colleague. I'll give you an example. A year ago, I can say this now, I met with Congressman Tom Tancredo, Republican Colorado, very conservative, and he said, you know, this whole policy is terrible, it's wrong, it's not conservative in its values. And finally, about a couple of weeks ago, he actually came out and said it's time to legalize drugs. But I couldn't come out in July of last year and shout to the world that I just talked to Tom Tancredo and he said it's time to legalize drugs and the drug war. I would never be able to have one more meeting in Congress. I might as well go home back to Texas and ride my horse every day. I would be done. You can't do that in any culture to betray a confidence. But the good news is, the day after I met with Tancredo, I gave his aide, his chief of staff, the names of 17 Republican staffers who would argue to their boss that we should end the federal prohibition of at least marijuana. I had another staffer ask me about 3 weeks ago for the same list. I looked at it again. I'm up to 31 Republican staffers now who would carry the water to their boss and argue for the end of federal prohibition. In the space of in 12 months, we've almost doubled the number of offices where the staffer, would argue to the boss, this is going to be a political winner. This will help you get reelected as you maintain your conservative values. So progress is being made even if you don't see any. That's all I can say.
No, I don't believe that just because it's not visible, progress isn't being made. But I also understand where, you know, discretion provides access. But if maintaining that discretion doesn't provide results, it just makes you an insider. And you sit around and you commiserate and go, oh, geez, this thing really does suck and blah, 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 blah. But unless you put somebody's balls in a vise, I don't think they're going to scream. But I could be wrong, Howard. I'm an old school kind of guy.
And I've only been doing this. Look, I really know what I'm talking about when it comes to police work and how to ride a horse across America. I'm your expert. I've only been doing this advocacy work for a total of 4 years, so I'm just starting to know enough to be dangerous, perhaps. But it's in this town especially, nothing happens quickly. Unless there's something like a 9/11 and you get the Patriot Act. I mean, this town just doesn't run and do things in a matter of a couple of months or even a couple of years. The only thing that what's pushing this whole thing now is the fact there's lack of money.
Well, that's true. But when you talk about, you know, change comes slowly and people are reticent to change, and that may be the conventional wisdom, but there are instances in our history where change happens literally overnight. If you look at alcohol prohibition, it became prohibited in a very short period of time. It had a short run. And then the repeal happened in a very short period of time. So, you know, this idea that, well, geez, it takes a while. Drugs have been prohibited for 95 years, and marijuana has been prohibited since 1937. Then it took a break in 68 and 67 when Johnson's Supreme Court ruled the Marijuana Tax Act as unconstitutional. So, man, it's like, you know, how slow of a process does this really need to be? I mean, it just doesn't. I mean, it's been almost 100 years, Howard. I mean, Jesus Christ. If that's an overnight sensation, then strike me dead, yeah. Jesus.
I got into this in 1997, and I thought by 2002, 2003, this is over because...
What the hell were you smoking, Howard?
There's no advantage to prohibition, and you present people with facts, and they'll say, oh, yeah, you're right, this is just a bad policy. Well, it doesn't work that way.
Well, let me ask you a question. How long were you a police officer?
18 years.
Now, did you work narcotics or anything like that?
No, I never worked narcotics per se. I mean, I found a lot of marijuana in cars and whatnot, and I handled, as a detective, I saw the aftermath of prohibition. People broke into your house, they stole your car, they broke your window in your car, stole your purse. So I handled that type of crime related to prohibition.
So for 18 years, you were obviously aware of the drug situation, because 60% of our crime is associated, directly tied to drug prohibition, and that's an FBI stat, not
right,
something.
Right, right. I use 70,
so,
but go ahead.
When did you have your epiphany? I mean, was it in the first part, middle of the 18 years, at the end of 18 years? When did you decide that this truly was bullshit?
Well, after about 10 years, and I was still in patrol, I saw my colleagues, after civil asset forfeiture laws were passed, I saw my colleagues spending all their 12-hour shift looking for a baggie of pot instead of a drunk driver. And it drove me bonkers, because I'd handled enough fatalities involving drunk drivers. I said, you're not contributing to the public safety when you go after a baggie of pot instead of a drunk driver. And they said, yeah, but the chief likes it, and it's fun, and it's just a fun to do thing. So, you know, you're fine with drunk drivers. We're going to go after the pot. And I said, it's just reducing public safety. And then when I was a detective is when I really had the epiphany, and I said, when a gentleman who'd lost in a burglary his grandfather's pocket watch, and he was describing it for the police report, and he got so mad he slammed his fist into the wall, his wife started to cry, and I just said at that moment, I said, let those SOBs have all the crack cocaine they want until they're dead. Stop bothering good people like Mr. and Mrs. Smith here. And from that first articulation, my articulation today is about the same. Let a person have enough cocaine till their nose falls off. I don't care. Just let them buy it legally for $2 a day so they won't break into people's homes, steal their cars, steal their identity.
So it wasn't smoking pot or doing LSD that caused this epiphany for you. It was just the actual nuts and bolts, nitty gritty, dirty shit that you came to view as the problem, right?
Exactly. I mean, police officers deal with crime victims every day. It's painful. When you see a grown man slam his fist into the wall, almost broke the drywall, the sheetrock, out of frustration and anger, that no matter what the watch was worth, you know, the money would not replace, it was his grandfather's. And I said, who cares about these people killing themselves with drugs or alcohol or whatever? They're causing all this crime. So let them have all they want for $2 a day until they die or figure it out. And that was my epiphany. I've always been concerned with making America a better, safer place, quality of life, safer to walk outside your house, safer to drive on the road, and come back to your house believing that there's a good chance, you know, somebody will not have broken in. That's what police officers used to be about in the 70s when I started. Now, we're all about search and arrest as opposed to protect and serve. It's disgusting.
Well, let me ask you this, Howard. You were a police officer, you said, for 18 years, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And when did you get out of the business?
Late 1994.
Late 1994. So, again, you know, this is the opium den. This is the internet. And we try to speak nothing but the truth. So I have a question, and you can defer and decline to answer if you so desire. But have you smoked pot? Do you know what the deal is?
Oh, sure. I smoked the first time when I worked for Domino's just before my 19th birthday, and I stopped. The last time was about 2 weeks before.
Domino's? Were you a delivery guy?
Oh, yeah, that's right. I made them, and then I delivered them, and I saw the thousands of stones. Students of Michigan State, and I smoked for 7 years, and it wasn't that they did not drug test police candidates in 1978.
Obviously.
9 people out of 10 had smoked, but I just said, you know, I'm 25 years old, I've got to grow up, and, you know, so I stopped smoking.
So you think that that anyone in our age group who smokes have not grown up and become adults?
No, I'm saying, When I turned, I think it was 26, and I went to the police, I said, okay, you're going to be a cop. You got to leave this behind. It's illegal, so I left it.
So you're not a cop anymore, though, right?
I'm not a cop anymore, but now I don't, because when I first started speaking to Rotary and Kiwanis, it was one of the most common questions was, Sal. It was almost always a woman, sorry. Sal,
when was the last time you smoked marijuana? And I'd say 27 years ago.
Why don't you just lie like all of us and say, I understand. So you want to be able to speak the truth, but do you think that it would lessen your credibility if you admitted to the fact that, I smoke a little marijuana. I think it's less hazardous and dangerous than alcohol. Or do you feel it's best for your position to say, I haven't smoked anything for 29 years?
Oh, no question about it. It's much better for the crowd to say, I haven't smoked in 27 years. Now it's been 30 some odd years, whatever it's been. It's you're much more effective at a Rotary or Kiwanis Club when you stand up there, you say it, and people believe you. And you don't dance around the question. You simply say, my last joint was 1978, and they go, oh, okay. And I look like a person who could walk out of my business suit and cowboy hat, put on a police uniform, and be a senior patrolman at 58. And so that does help with being the messenger on Capitol Hill, or when I wear my T-shirt into a coffee shop on Saturday.
Okay, well, let me ask you this, Howard. When we are successful, when the drug policy reform movement does get their shit together and the momentum changes and we all get on the same page, get off this medical marijuana deal and get on to repealing drug prohibition across the board, and when we find success in that, do you think you'll light up a bud or two just to see what you've been missing for all these years?
Oh, I know what I've been missing. I smoke 3 times a week, not heavyweight, but 3 times a week on average. I know exactly what I'm missing. And, yeah, I enjoy, but, I was always a social smoker. I never smoked alone. So, yeah, I'd love to go out to Colorado with my brother who lives in Golden there above Denver and put out a campfire and look at the stars and smoke a doobie. I mean, it's a wonderful feeling, and it's a great camaraderie thing. It's like passing the peace pipe. I miss that, but not enough to hurt my ability, because My ability on Capitol Hill is my persona, that I am the Lone Ranger. I'm a straight arrow, and I would do nothing to besmirch that.
But as part of your Lone Ranger straight arrow persona, which I mean, I agree. I think you got that shit down pretty pat. But when you present yourself, do you ever allude to the fact that you have personal experience and you speak from personal experience that at least from your experience, marijuana is a very harmless substance? Do you bring that part of your history up, or do you just completely let that slide?
I never bring it up unless a staffer asks me about it. They say, well, do you have any experience with this stuff? It comes up maybe 10% of the time, or a little bit less than that. But what I always emphasize is, 18 years as a police officer, I went to 0 calls for service generated by the use of marijuana. It can be like any mind-altering, intoxicating, addictive drugs. Marijuana can be a bad choice, but it is almost a 0.0 police problem, and that's why it's a horrific diversion of good police officer time when they should be chasing drunk drivers and child molesters as opposed to Michael Phelps. And that has in fact, my wife wears a T-shirt, Moms Say Legalize Pot, and her stock answer is, I want the police chasing the drunk drivers and child molesters, not Michael Phelps. Well, everybody says, well, that makes sense.
Well, let me ask you this then. Based upon your experience as an 18-year veteran police officer and your discussions with, obviously ongoing discussions with current police officers now, how many police percentage-wise do you think actually get high?
Get high?
Mm-hmm.
I really don't know. I would say a wild guess would be 10% or less.
And how many of them do you think, not of the 10% or less, but how many police do you believe are involved in, dirty dealings? I mean, mostly narcotics. I mean, there is police corruption across the board, and I'm not trying to come down hard on police or anything like that. I mean, that's just a fact, but...
Okay.
How many police in the specialized areas of narcotics and drug enforcement do you think are dirty?
If you include dirty, and I do, to mean you lie under oath, you lie in front of a judge, you lie in front of a jury, we're talking probably over half. Well over half will lie under for a search warrant. They'll lie about the search itself of a vehicle. The greatest corruption in police work is not that we take a lot of money from drug dealers. That does happen. You read about it in the paper. What you rarely read about are police officers who lie under oath. The defendant gave me permission to search his car when, in fact, the defendant did not. They found the marijuana, and who are you going to believe, the kid with the marijuana or the cop? They always believe the cop. Well, and if there's no camera, then the citizen is absolutely the victim here of an illegal search. And that's the greatest corruption of my profession, is not so much we take money. It's that we lie and we lie and we lie. And in the case of the grandmother in Atlanta was a perfect example of that, where she got killed
right.
when they lied on a search right. warrant to enter the house.
Well, that was very candid, Howard. I certainly appreciate that. That's a good thing. And now that you're no longer affiliated with LEAP, what are you going to do to keep your visibility up there and continuing to fight the good fight for repeal? What are your plans, Howard?
Well, I got to be a little bit circumspect. Basically, within a couple of weeks, I'm going to be back on Capitol Hill. I've had some wonderful support coming in from around the country, both of kind words and letters of support, of more than just kind words, and with almost no luck, I have high confidence that within 2 weeks, I will be back on the Capitol Hill, talking to staffers, talking to congressmen, attending the hearings, just like I was. I simply will not be carrying the LEAP business card. I'll be carrying another business card.
So you'll be wearing a different T-shirt. You'll be wearing a different T-shirt.
Yeah, a little bit of a different T-shirt, but no, I'm going to be working on this until it's in the history books or I draw my last breath.
Okay,
that's just the way it is.
Well, I can appreciate that. We're going to close out here in a couple of minutes. I really appreciate you spending the time. I like to have these interviews run at least an hour or so because that gives my my guests a lot of time to air out their views and get a good understanding. So I want to my last question before I give you the last few minutes to say whatever you wish. My last question is: can Gil Kerlikowske be trusted?
No.
Well, fuck, that was easy.
Well, I talked to the people who ran Seattle 75 back in 2003, and Kerlikowske, when the vote came in. According to the guy who ran it, he said Kerlikowske got on the news the next day and said, "I am telling my officers to ignore the vote and arrest more people for marijuana next year, not less." So, no, he cannot be trusted. He is, and that's back to our discussion earlier, he's following Obama's lead of saying, and Kerlikowske, as you know, 2 weeks ago said, "I will no longer use the word war on drugs because it's inappropriate, it causes too much dissension."
We're still going to chase down every pot smoker and pill popper we can find. We're just not going to call it the war on drugs.
We're not going to call it war on drugs. And terminology is important. So what we're trying to do through LEAP people like Tom Angel, of our media director, is get a question into the White House. So what are you going to call it if it's not the war on drugs? And we want to call it modern prohibition. And if we can frame it as modern prohibition, it will again help educate the American public that this is just like alcohol prohibition, and the solution is the same: repeal prohibition.
All right. That's what I want to end with, Howard. I want to have let's look at this scenario. President Obama is going to give a major drug policy speech, and I want him to channel Howard Wooldridge. So, what would President Obama say in a national drug policy speech if he was channeling Howard Wooldridge? And you got about 2.5 minutes.
President Obama is going to say that, first, the efforts of the last 40 years, the war on drugs, has been an utter failure, and that this policy, this strategy to enforce modern prohibition is over. We are immediately adopting a public health approach. We're looking for what is the best for the individual who is taking these drugs, and what's the best for society, which has to deal with the consequences of drug abuse. And to that end, I'm immediately calling for the United States Congress to pass a bill which will be the same as the Portugal or the Mexican Accord, where no one will ever go to jail or suffer a criminal record for the simple possession of any drug. This is a first step in a process, and I want to look at the results and the recommendations of the Webb Commission on what we should do differently going forward in the area of these illegal narcotics. And certainly we know today that punishment and more punishment does not deter anyone from the use of drugs nor the selling of drugs. And I'm immediately recommending that the Congress look at their sentencing structure for all drug crimes to reflect the fact that these that they do not correspond to the potential harm done by the drugs themselves. And that's my take in a nutshell.
Well, Howard Wooldridge, one of the founding members of LEAP and now a free agent out there, I want to thank you for joining us in the Opium Den today. I was enlightened by many of the things you said. Your candor was more than I had anticipated, and I believe that this will be one of the more popular interview downloads at the Opium Den. So, again, for me and from everyone else inside the Opium Den, Howard, I want to thank you very much for your candor and taking the time to speak with us this evening.
You're most welcome, and if I can ever be of service in the future, please just call.
Well, once you get your new gig, baby, we're going to bring you back and compare your answers today to your answers then.
Okay, that's the date. Sounds good.
All right, Howard, thanks again, brother.
Okay, take care. Good night.
Bye now.
Bye.
Okay, that was Howard Wooldridge, one of the founding members of the LEAP organization, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. I like Howard. This is the first time I've really spent much time speaking with him. He's always very busy running around all the drug policy conferences that we speak at together. But I hope you enjoy this conversation with Howard Wooldridge, and helps to stimulate you and gives you some ideas on how to have the conversation with those around you who may not be as literate and progressive as you with regards to the issue of drugs. So, from inside the Opium Den, I'm Daniel Williams. Good night.